there has been a, it's interesting to see, it's been interesting to see the, how museums have changed in how they tell their story. And there is, you know, a real understanding that the way kind of things were told is probably not the best way to convey history to people. And I'm bringing on the show right now, the executive director of the Hennepin History Museum is John Crippen. And he is kind enough today to join us to talk about presenting history in a museum setting and how you make sure that not only is the history being presented an accurate representation, but also relatable and engageable to help people basically better understand the history of a certain event. John, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Thanks for having me, Matt. It's always good to talk to you.
It's always good to chat with you here. Let's start off first things first. Since you're on Hennepin History Museum, located in Minneapolis, what do you guys got going on right now as far as the exhibits going on?
We've got a couple of exhibits on, I think, that speak to your point, that are talking about the impact of freeway construction in the 1950s and 60s, and the impact of desegregation efforts here in Minneapolis that started 50 years ago, all stemming from a long pattern of discrimination and redlining and racial covenants about how our communities were built. But we're also delving into some new stuff on family history. We've got a Family in Pieces exhibit where a woman has done some inspirational things to interpret her own family story. And we've got a memory lab down in the library that helps people digitize their own histories as well.
I think when it's interesting, as a person who likes history and that likes museums, I have watched as in the last 30 years, a lot of museums realize that the history they were talking about was relatively incomplete. It was basically a white European centric historical perspective, and the realization is that there was a lot of stories, particularly the Native American and African American stories, as well as other minority groups, that weren't being talked about, and there was a real movement to bring in those stories as well. But this seems like it's almost, there's a kind of a genesis going on here where your people, I don't know if it's a, is it the timeline sort of the thing, that the fact that they're, as opposed to like the Civil War or the Revolutionary War or something that, that happened a long time ago where there's no one around today, we have significant historical moments that happened where there are a lot of people still around that can talk about them. Talk a little bit about this new mentality and change and how your museum looks at trying to present history from some of these perspectives.
Yeah, I see two things, but as you kept asking the question, I see three things. One, when I came of age, and you can share with me the thought of, ooh, I'm not as young as I used to be, so
yeah.
I've been doing this for a while. And when I came into the biz now 25, 30 years ago, we had the conceit that we could be neutral and that we're just going to put the facts out and then let people debate the facts amongst themselves. And there's been a real movement in the last 5-10 years, going all the way to T-shirts and slogans to say museums are not neutral. And I think that gets to a number of different nuances. One being decisions are always made about what you put out and what you don't put out. So even if you put out facts as like simple facts, which are hard to come by in their own way, the very act of choosing which facts to put out expresses a point of view, which gets to my second thought, I think, which is for a long time, museums preached to the choir. And you got that kind of monolithic white perspective sometimes because those were the people that were interested in history and we weren't too concerned about broadening out into other areas, other groups who hadn't traditionally been museum goers. And we've now understood that that's also a faulty premise, and it's not a good way for us to survive, to grow, et cetera. So we really have to, if we're going to live to our mission as we state it, that we're going to put history out there for the good of all of the community, humanity, et cetera, all means all, and we really have to lean into some of the stuff that we haven't done for a long time. And then as you're asking the question, I think the third thing that I would put out there is there has been a shift. I mean, time marches on. And so for a long time in this country, museums would talk about late 18th, and 19th century, because that was quote unquote history. That was the old stuff. That was the stuff that spoke to our grandparents and their either lived history or what their grandparents lived through, and they wanted to live that. As the 21st century marches on, more and more people are saying, well, I guess that's interesting, but it doesn't relate to my life. And so we really have to find topics that bring it up to the present day, which means getting a little bit more, like a lot more 20th century history than 19th century history, because that's the lived experience or the lived experience of your parents, grandparents, et cetera. And so we just have to work through all that stuff and say, all right, what are the stories that are meaningful to people in their lives today? And that's the bottom line. And how do we tell those in an authentic way?
Well, and here's where I think you run into a pretty big problem. I mean, it's at least from what you've just described, let's just take in the South. There are a lot of pictures from the 1950s and 1960s of African Americans trying to go get order food at a restaurant and having food yelled at them, being yelled at by a white crowd, being harassed, people trying to march and people spraying them with water and people attacking them in the streets because they're daring to march. When you want to talk about a history like that, generally you can find the people who are sitting at the counter who want to talk about that. And once again, that's obviously a great perspective to get. But when you want to kind of go on out there, and if your effort is to try to get everyone's perspective on something like this, the reality is there's a lot of people that look at those pictures and don't want to be reminded of what side they were really on, and so henceforth don't want to talk about it. And it is kind of an interesting perspective, because as a museum, I imagine you want to put out all the stories. But the problem is that, you know, there's a lot of people that might not, especially the very uncomfortable stories, not want to talk about their standards and their stances a few decades ago.
Yeah, that is a thing. The school desegregation exhibit I mentioned, I think we had an element of that. I'll try to do the quick version. It was two schools in South Minneapolis that paired together, and one was an all-white school, and the other was about 60% black, 40%. Whites and other races. And we've gotten a lot more information from people who were leaning into that effort and wanting this pairing to happen and wanting the desegregation. And we don't have a lot of people coming forward saying, yeah, I was one of those white families that said, hell no, I don't want to do this. I don't want you messing around with my school. So that is an issue. On the other hand, I think a common argument is the people who were, if you will, a little bit more reactionary by our current standards, you could argue their story has already been told. Their mainstream view of the world at that time has already been well known. And so it's the folks that didn't have as much of a voice 60 some years ago that we now want to shine a spotlight on their voice a little bit, because it's about time.
Well, and there's also a richness there. I mean, and you yourself have talked about this. When you sit down with someone and there's a, you know, and these events create very vivid lifelong memories, both positive and negative. And the fact that people will want to share what happened about the being discriminated against, about trying to change the system, it does present very rich, very wonderful firsthand experiences, stories, which once again, that gets back to my main point. Allows a person who's visiting a museum to get really sucked into that moment in history.
Yeah, absolutely. So you just got to find those stories that really grab people and suck them in. I mean, the other mantra that we've got to have in the museum world is gone are the days when you put an exhibit up that will go for gallery after gallery with just really dense material. People don't have time or interest to do that. So what we really have to do is grab people in a few short minutes and hopefully inspire them to do their own exploration afterwards and do some more lifelong learning.
There is an element here. I mean, you're in Minneapolis. Obviously, the George Floyd situation just happened there. We, of course, broadcast in Wisconsin, Kenosha, that happening there. I mean, a lot of the events that happened over there with the Blake family, you have undeniable history that's happening now. That is there. That, I mean, it's kind of one of those things when you talk about as the change in talking about George Washington or you know this great governor from 150 years ago, it's almost like it's kind of smacking back much harder because there. Once you start realizing the history that's been going on around, I mean, it's hard to. It's got to imagine like to a point. A cat going after a laser, you know, it's kind of like, oh my gosh, it's everywhere. Yeah, it's everywhere.
Well, and you know, I talked about how old I am, but, through my adult life, this is the first time I've felt like in my community, I'm living in a historic moment. I mean, every day is history, but there are some moments that are more important, more historical than others. And it strikes me that it would be fun to talk to people who lived through, say, the civil rights movement of the 60s to say, how aware were you in that moment of how momentous this was, how ground shaking it was for the country? Because when you're in the middle of it, it's hard to have much perspective because it's flurrying around you so fast.
And that, as far as curators go, and imagine that your museum, it presents a problem there because I know you and I had talked before about, you know, just simple things that happened after the uprising, after the murder of George Floyd by the Minneapolis police. That, you know, there were tons of historical things that were out there that you just, it's only a few weeks later realize, oh my gosh, we should have gone out there and tried to grab that stuff as to try to preserve the history of it. But it is, it's hard to put it through because as it's happening, it really is, I think, a hard place to gauge, especially people who specialize in history that realize, oh, that is, you just said, a historical time. That just happened an hour ago. That's historic. We got to try to remember that.
There is a little bit of that, but what was fascinating to me 2 years ago and the time since is we knew some of this stuff is historic. I mean, despite all of the chaos, it was like, this is obviously a moment. But we got a strong reaction from people out in the street. It's not time for this to be put away in a museum. This, like, we did a lot of work and talked with people about the street art. Lots of art went up on plywood panels and that sort of thing. And people said very strongly, this is ours right now, and it's still doing its work in the street, so don't squirrel it away and don't hide it in the basement of a museum. So I take the long view and say, this stuff will eventually, if it's meant for us to care for it long term, we'll get some of this stuff. And there's a natural winnowing process of, one thing, you know, their life cycle. Mm-hmm. When's their life cycle ready for a museum, and when does it still need to be out in the world?
And I mean, it's also making sure you show the respect. And it's like, no, don't worry. Yes, this is not,
I mean,
about. Go ahead.
And to be fair, the shortcomings of museums over many, many years has caused a lot of distrust of museums. And so there's a lot of sprouting up of, I'm going to do my own thing. I'm not going to trust a venerated institution. And so we've got to do the hard work to build trust that we maybe never had. So that takes time and patience too, and takes a lot of goodwill and humility.
It is, and it's a learning process. I imagine it's been a pretty steep learning process for you too.
Yeah. I mean, but good. I mean, learning is always exciting, right? if you've got the mindset of learning is growth, then lean into it and do it.
John Crippen is joining us, the executive director of the Hennepin History Museum. We're talking about the evolution of expressing history in a museum and how it is changing. We'll take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about, because we can actually go back a little bit further, the 35W bridge collapse, and talk about that and how you kind of address that, as well as also more about the individual stories. Let's take a break. Come back. It's the Matt McNeil Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Matt McNeil Show, John Crippen, the executive director of the Hennepin History Museum, joining us, talking about the evolution of how museums present historical information. John, I like the radical roots model here, where it talks about in the short term, trust, building trust with new people, better info for the current collection. Then you look at active participation in museum activities. And then finally, you get to building mutual beneficial relationships with communities, representing the new items in the collection, and people better understand the relevance and importance of the specific elements of history. I think that that's That's a very progressive mentality. I mean, it is really kind of understanding it's more about, as opposed, like I said, it's the, as opposed, come in and see the historical stuff. It's, hey, we're part of the community and we want to make sure the community is represented here.
Yeah, I think so. And I don't think of it as that radical and progressive, but I guess it's good to have the outside perspective say, yeah, you're not doing that. I think museums have rested on their laurels for a long time, and it's a little bit of not only preaching to the choir, as I talked about earlier, but assuming that we are institutions that are trusted and trustworthy. Mm-hmm. And like so many things these days getting called into question, that's getting called into question. So you got to earn that every day. Mm-hmm. And Hennepin History Museum is on its own trajectory. We struggle a bit because we've never been above the radar and as the way some other institutions have been. But on the other hand, it's made us aware that we've got to earn everything we're going to get. And it's made us aware that if we're going to kind of bust out of the little quiet corner that we've been in, we've got to do something a little different. So we're trying that.
Let's apply that new mentality towards something that happened a little bit long ago, which is the 35W bridge collapse, a major catastrophe here in Minneapolis. Talk about how, you know, and not necessarily as you've done anything with it, but, you know, as you approach something like that, this new mentality, how do you feel that you can relay that history better to a community?
Well, I think making sure that you get as many voices in that kind of story as possible and not just take the accepted dominant voice that might be apologetic for, oh, well, we didn't do anything wrong. But say, you know, at a policy level, let's really dive into this and say, how did such a thing happen? How did we get, and historians are good at taking the long view. It's one thing to talk about the structural failures of that specific bridge, but how did we get to a point when that bridge, as well as so many others across the country, had similar structural failures? How did we get to a point where this was overlooked or not taken care of? So that's on the policy level. But then it's also, and what I've seen so far about 35W Bridge, the Minnesota History Center over in St. Paul has the back door of the school bus that was famously precariously hanging on the edge of the bridge. Just the visceral human story of tragedies like that, and not forgetting that amidst all the policy and the important stuff like of how things happened, is this was an impact on human people, and a terrifying event for the people, a horrible event for people who lost loved ones, and et cetera. And never forgetting that human impact, I think.
Does
that build trust too? It's like, yeah, okay, you understand it. You're not just being cold and heartless, analytic person.
Does it become a problem then for a museum though, when people want to expect accountability per se? And obviously you try to tell the stories on both sides of something like this, but say in the case of, when the interstate system where the red lined houses and neighborhoods just got completely wiped out, there's a lot of banks, a lot of, how planning and zoning guys, the planning people that did this, who, either are gone, have died, or don't want to talk about it. Their replacements, they're just like, okay, that's history. We don't want to. I mean, is it a danger to try to get into the point of, having a level of accountability with an exhibit?
Yeah, I mean, it gets dangerous. I think my friends over at Minnesota Historical Society have had a little more struggles with that recently, because they've had some elected officials go after them for taking too strong of a view one way or another. That's the job we signed up for, is to help people think historically and think analytic, think smartly about how to weigh evidence and debate topics. And sometimes you have to admit you're never going to find people that come to agreement on this. So let's have a respectful and informative discussion about different viewpoints. And we do our best to try to create places for people to do that, but it's not easy. The example that the 35W exhibit that we've got now, this is a fairly quiet story in this area. And some people, when I said, how come nobody talks about 35W? Because everybody talks about 94 in St. Paul. And somebody, a white person in South Minneapolis, grumbled to me, well, it's because it was white people displaced, not black people. Well, that's not quite true either. But it is true that we don't know the exact numbers, but we expect more white families were displaced by this highway construction than black families. What the exhibit pulls out is there was a disparate impact on those two communities. The white families pretty easily got their value somewhere else and reestablished themselves in a comfortable home. The black families really struggled because there was nowhere else for them to go. And so not everybody wants to hear that, but you put that out there and then you talk about what that means and what that means for our community today. That's what I keep leaning into is we can dance around the what happened in the 1960s till we're blue in the face, but what of that legacy do we still live with today, and what can we do about that in our current lives? Because that gets it away from an esoteric debate and into, all right, real life, how do we live with each other and how do we come up with ways to make our lives better?
Outstanding thought process there. HennepinHistory.org, HennepinHistory.org. That is the website for the Hennepin History Museum. John Crippen is the executive director. Once again, what are the exhibits running over there, John?
Human Toll and A Separate Not Equal, our Highway in Our Schools exhibit, and then Family in Pieces. Do you have 20 seconds for me to throw in a less heavy topic, Matt?
Sure, go ahead.
I heard all of those wonderful stations you're now talking to in Wisconsin. And football is around the corner, and I just have to remind our friends in Wisconsin that the Gophers still hold the slight edge in the football rivalry between the two schools, and we've got the axe. And even though it's been a rough 20 years on this side of the border, we're coming back, and you know you're gonna have to come get that axe.
Oh, good. Hey, John, thanks for that. That's not gonna come back and bite me at all. Thanks, John. John Crippen, the executive director of the Hennepin History Museum, send your letters of disapproval to him. John, you're welcome.
Yes,
you're always welcome back on the air here. Thank you very much. I do appreciate the time today.
We'll talk to you later. Thanks.
Take care. John Crippen from the Hennepin History Museum. Go talk to him. I didn't bring it up. Hey, so we usually do our weekend festival here. I'll give you one in Wisconsin, but this one sounds good. The Mexican Fiesta going on in Milwaukee this weekend. Mexican Fiesta, Brad. That doesn't sound bad at all.
Can't go wrong with that.
But you can. The winner this week is Minnesota. The Minnesota State Fair is going on. I'm going to gorge myself on bad food tomorrow. I'll look for photos. Look for photos of me sweating. The Wisconsin stations, Devil Radio up next. Minneapolis-St. Paul, Hour 2 coming your way.